welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Ron is not going to be with us today.
He's hunting tumbleweeds in the West. And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the host of Podcast DX.
Today, we will be talking about atrial fibrillation, also known as AFib.
That's right, Jean. AFib is an irregular, usually rapid heart rhythm, also called arrhythmia, that can lead to blood clots. When we talk about arrhythmias, it can get a bit confusing. Any abnormality in the heart rate are called arrhythmias. And within the category of arrhythmias, there are two types. Tachycardia, which is a fast, irregular heartbeat of 100 beats per minute or more, and bradycardia, which is a slow heart rate of fewer than 60 beats per minute.
Okay, so tachy is fast and brady is slow. What about AFib?
I'm getting there.
Okay, sorry. I guess my pulse was quickening.
Funny. So within the two categories, you can have other subtypes. One is atrial flutter, which is the result of a rapid electrical circuit in the atrium. These are usually more organized and regular than AFib. Atrial flutter occurs most often in people with heart disease and in those that have had heart surgery.
Okay.
Within the first week of the surgery. It isn't unusual for atrial atrial flutter to convert to atrial fibrillation.
Okay, and are we ever actually going to hear about what an AFib is?
No patients.
No, I don't.
AFib, or atrial fibrillation, is a very common irregular heart rhythm that causes the upper chambers of the heart, which are called the atria, to contract abnormally. The Mayo Clinic says that during atrial fibrillation, the upper chambers, the atria, beat chaotically and irregularly, out of sync with the lower chambers, the ventricles, of the heart. For many people, AFib may have no symptoms. However, AFib may cause a fast, pounding heartbeat, which are called palpitations. It may also cause shortness of breath and weakness. Episodes of AFib may come and go, or they may be persistent. Although AFib itself usually isn't life-threatening, it is a serious medical condition that requires proper treatment to prevent a stroke.
Okay, well, preventing a stroke is good, and I can understand, you know, AFib is atrial fibrillation. So does AFib lead to having a stroke?
I'm glad you asked.
Okay.
The National Institute of Health had an article which was based on the Canadian Cardiovascular Study that said AFib is the most important risk factor for a stroke. Mm-hmm. When the heart isn't beating with a normal rhythm, either because of AFib or another condition, it can lead to erratic blood flow throughout the chambers of the heart. This abnormal blood flow can sometimes lead to the formation of a clot, which can then travel through the blood vessels and become stuck. When a clot becomes lodged or stuck, it restricts blood flow wherever it is stuck. And if it's stuck in the brain, it will eventually lead to a stroke. Strokes stemming from AFib-related clots carry a higher risk of brain damage than strokes stemming from clots caused by other conditions. So arrhythmias are serious business.
It sounds like it. And unfortunately, there isn't one cause for an irregular heartbeat. There are several things that may cause an arrhythmia. For example, your genetics, stress, scarring of the heart due to prior heart injuries such as cardiac arrest, changes to your heart structure such as cardiomyopathy, blocked arteries, calcium or arteriosclerosis, I cannot say it.
Plaque.
Today. Plaque. Mm-hmm. Coronary artery disease, high blood pressure, stress, overactive and underactive thyroid gland, stress, Yeah, smoking, you know, smoking, drinking, drug abuse, diabetes, sleep apnea, and as I said before, damage to the heart, for example, from cardiac arrest.
So AFib is a common arrhythmia whose incidence is high in the elderly population above 75 years of age. This is due to the fact that there are so many elderly here in America who have coronary artery disease. And like you were saying, coronary artery disease and high blood pressure, it's a vicious cycle.
It is. And how would one treat AFib? Not that we're going to be treating, but how would a healthcare provider treat AFib? And is there a way to actually break that cycle?
Treatment for AFib may include medications, therapy to reset the heart rhythm, and catheter procedures to block faulty heart signals.
Okay.
But as far as stopping the cycle, a study in Harvard Health noticed that a vegan diet may help lower heart-damaging inflammation more than a diet recommended by the American Heart Association.
But that's just like one study, right?
Well, there was another study
where
the researchers from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine in Washington, D.C., where they collaborated.
gathered information.
They gathered information from a host of clinical trials.
Okay.
So they did collate information.
Okay.
And observational studies. And they found that a plant-based diet was consistently linked to improvement of heart health.
Yeah, I actually think I read that one, where the risk of death from cardiovascular disease is reduced by, I think, something outrageous, like 40%.
True, yes. Coronary heart disease risk is reduced by 40%. Blocked arteries are unblocked partially or fully as much as 91% of patients, and hypertension or high blood pressure risk drops by 34%.
Wow, that's really impressive. I guess we're canceling the barbecue party for Dominic's birthday. Researchers are the researchers telling us that a plant-based diet is healthier? I mean, I wonder how many people are actually following that advice besides us, because we've been eating nothing but vegetables for months now.
It's good for you.
Okay.
The good news is, she sounds so excited.
I'm so excited.
Good news is,
in desperate need of a burger.
Millennials are leading the way.
Oh, okay.
And Americans are open to incorporating more plant-based foods and eating less meat and dairy. So this could be a win-win for the health of the average American and the health of the planet, since animal agriculture accounts for at least 14% of global greenhouse gas emissions and is the single largest contributor of methane so far until the permafrost melts, a potent greenhouse gas that has a warming potential 26 to 34 times higher than carbon dioxide over a 100-year period.
And are there any like plant-based diets that you would recommend, even though they're not sponsors of the show?
Yes, I would personally recommend Splendid Spoon.
Okay.
I can put a link on our website for anyone that wants to try it. The food is extremely tasty. I've already lost over 20 pounds, and my cardiologist was really happy with the results of my latest lab work.
It is good to know that there's something positive you can do for your health and the health of the planet all in one. But we really should wrap this episode up so I can go get a burger.
She's kidding.
I'm not gonna
She's kidding.
Okay.
We're going to go and have a nice vegetable soup.
Yay.
Got it. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com. On Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, TikTok.
And Mars.
And Mars.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment. And before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard in this podcast.
Till next week.